Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The fate of Florida's DACA recipients was top of mind for some of the state's politicos this week, and the issue sparked emotional debate from surprising places.
The dreamers are the future. The dreamers are those that understand what it is to be an American.
Also tonight, a bill directing the state to only contract with providers that promote childbirth is heading to the Senate floor.
I'm in favor of people getting counseling services. I'm in favor of women getting health care services. I do have concern because the legislature really should not necessarily be picking winners and losers.
We'll also chat with one of the state's savviest political reporters on how the session is going and where it might go over the next 7 weeks. It's the end of week two of the 2018 Florida lawmaking session. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. The plight of immigrants brought to the United States as children reverberated throughout national politics this week, but DACA sparked lively debates in Florida as well. Kate Payne catches us up on the program, which is slated to expire in March.
The Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA program, is a bridge for immigrants brought to the country as children. Recipients are protected from deportation and get legal work permits as long as they renew them. In September, the Trump administration started phasing out DACA, sending immigrants and activists reeling. Florida Democrats are putting on the pressure to find a fix for the country's estimated 800,000 DACA recipients, also known as Dreamers. Cristian Avila says his parents gave up everything when they brought him and his siblings to the U.S.
As a child, I was raised to put my head down when there was a police car driving next to us. Every time we drove past the cop car, my parents would tell me, agacha la cabeza, mijo, para que no te vea la policía. Put your head down son, so the police doesn't see you. The fear of any authority pulling us over or even questioning us at the time was huge.
State Senator Daphne Campbell, a North Miami Beach Democrat, is sponsoring a bill that would encourage Congress to extend DACA. It's largely ceremonial, but is meant to send a strong message from the Florida legislature.
And we have to understand these children didn't ask to go to all this. These children didn't ask to come to America when they were little. These children are innocent, and I don't think they should pay for any wrongdoing by their parents.
Patrick Ariel Savion came to the U.S. after fleeing gang violence in Honduras. He's not on DACA, but he has friends and family who are.
And all I want is for my friends to live with the peace of mind that the nation that they call home will not leave them behind, that they won't be expelled to some foreign land. I want them to have the opportunity to continue making America, a nation founded by immigrants, the great country that it is. I can't explain to you guys the anxiety, the sadness, the fear, and the anger that the immigration crackdown has brought on our communities.
The testimony of Savion and other activists struck a chord with Hialeah Republican Senator Rene Garcia, whose family is Cuban.
The dreamers are those that understand what it is to be an American. The dreamers are the ones that are dreaming to have a better life, to make sure they can do better, not only for their families, but for their communities.
That's right.
And that's why it's so important, so critical that we send this message back.
Other Republicans are weighing in, too. In a move that's surprising his critics, Governor Rick Scott published an op-ed in USA Today this week defending DACA. Scott is widely expected to run for the U.S. Senate. And State Senator Gary Farmer, a Fort Lauderdale Democrat, chalks it up to election year acrobatics.
Well, I and those around me welcome any ally in our fight to protect dreamers and their families. Rick Scott is going to have to prove himself with actions rather than words before anyone takes him at his word.
This all comes after President Donald Trump reportedly used profanity to disparage immigrants from Haiti, El Salvador, and African countries. Some of his supporters aren't holding back either. North Florida Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz was on MSNBC this week.
I would say that the conditions in Haiti are deplorable. They are disgusting. I mean, it's everywhere you look in Haiti, it's sheet metal and garbage when I was there.
His Republican colleague in the Florida Senate, Doug Broxson of Pensacola, thinks lawmakers should leave federal immigration policy to Washington. But Republican Rene Garcia worries the partisan Congress is incapable of getting it done, especially in an election year. But he's hopeful. He says Dreamers are the future of the state and of the Florida legislature. Senator Campbell's measure has two more committee stops before it heads to the floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Florida lawmakers appear to be fast-tracking a controversial bill that seeks to regulate the state's pregnancy crisis centers. As Sasha Cordner reports, the measure that wades into the abortion debate has already passed the Florida House and is now heading to the Senate floor.
Fernandina Beach Republican Senator Aaron Bean is the bill's Senate sponsor.
Senate Bill 444 codifies in statutes the existing Pregnancy Support Services Program, which has been funded by the state since the 2005-2006 fiscal year. The program provides pregnancy support and wellness services, program awareness activities, and communication activities through a statewide alliance. The bill directs the Department of Health to contract with the Pregnancy Care Support Network and creates contract deliverables for the program, including financial reports, staffing requirements, and timeframes for achieving obligations.
The goal, supporters say, is to not only provide millions in funds, but to also regulate the state's pregnancy crisis centers that provide support and wellness services. But it comes with one caveat that many opponents disagree with.
The network is to contract only with providers who exclusively promote and support childbirth.
That means it could preclude groups that provide information on birth control and abortion services like Planned Parenthood from receiving any state funds. Opponents of the measure say that means it picks winners and losers.
I questioned some of the people who came in the health care committee, and they told me they do not provide contraceptive services.
That's Lantana Republican Representative Lori Berman, who's against the measure.
I can't imagine someone getting health care information and not having access to something as basic as contraceptive services. This legislation does not attempt to solve the documented problem of the crisis pregnancy centers providing inaccurate and incomplete medical information. Instead of funding these crisis pregnancy centers, we should be addressing the issue of misleading women and not providing medically accurate information.
But the bill's House sponsor, Tampa Republican Representative Jackie Toledo, says that's not the case.
As a mother, I can't imagine not knowing where to turn if I was pregnant and not knowing who to turn to and having the support needed. This is not about picking winners and losers. This bill is about more choices, not less. This bill is about more access, not less.
Still, some bill supporters say it's a fair point to note that no other state agency is directed to contract with a particular entity in perpetuity. Here's Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley.
Well, my understanding of the explanation of the bill today was that there's an entity that includes several different sub-entities, but you know what? It's a fair question, and it's certainly something that I look forward to addressing if this bill makes it up to the floor.
And after passing the Senate Appropriations Committee Thursday, the bill is now headed to the Senate floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Back on Tuesday of last week, U.S. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke raised eyebrows nationwide when he stood alongside Governor Rick Scott at the Tallahassee Airport and promised Florida would not see oil and gas drilling rigs off its coasts. But all that came under question today after Walter Cruikshank, the acting director of the Interior Department's Bureau of Energy Management, told members of a U.S. House committee that no formal decision has been made as to which states, if any, would be off limits to offshore drilling. Democrats were quick to pounce on the apparent contradiction, especially U.S. Senator Bill Nelson. He called the earlier seeming promise to exempt Florida a political stunt. Still to come on Capitol Report, the Miami Herald's Capitol Bureau Chief sees one important issue flying under the radar at the Florida Capitol.
And we saw some bills move this week in that regard, and that is criminal justice reform.
Two competing proposals moving through the Constitutional Revision Commission look to solve the singular issue of felon voting rights.
And I look at those faces, and I realize that these are human beings suffering from addiction. And don't they deserve the right to vote and hold office?
Florida has never had laws specifically banning employment discrimination based on gender identity, but that would change under a bill now under consideration in the legislature.
They're doing that not only because they know it's the right thing to do, but they know that it's the right thing to do for their business if they want to recruit top talent and they want to make sure that they have a diverse workforce.
And lawmakers want to help Floridians pay their loans back.
Many people get paid twice a month or every other week. Sometimes it's challenging on these types of loans to require them to be paid once a month.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
On Capitol Report, we are so delighted to have Mary Ellen Kloss, who is the Capitol Bureau Chief of the Miami Herald, with us here. And the end of week two, Mary Ellen, and just overall your impression of this particular 2018 Florida lawmaking session. Not a lot of, after the initial week when we had a little bit of drama, not too much else in the way of fireworks.
No, this has been the most low energy second week of session I can remember in a long time. We had the Senate canceling meeting after meeting this week. I don't see any major initiatives moving forward in either place this week, either the House or the Senate. And, you know, the one thing that is obviously out there that is likely to consume most of the energy and perhaps be the only significant focus is the budget. And we're waiting for those developments to emerge in terms of budget allocations and big picture issues relating to that in the next 2 weeks. We'll see that those come out.
Yeah, because one thing that complicates things, being an early session, being a January, February, rather than the traditional March, April session, is that what in week five we'll actually get a revenue estimating conference that will give lawmakers a bit more of a definitive handle on how much money they are going to have to play with. That is very deep in the session.
Right. So they're going to come out with their preliminary numbers that will just be tweaked when the final numbers come. I don't think that that will change anything too significantly. But, you know, the remarkable thing is we don't have any major initiatives moving through. We don't have any. We saw the House with its lineup of legislation last week that they pushed out pretty aggressively early on. Those were off to me very designed to appeal to the Republican base in an election year, you know, the sanctuary city legislation and that kind of thing. And then, you know, there is something that I think is going to be a bit of a sleeper issue that I've been watching, and we saw some bills move this week in that regard, and that is criminal justice reform. I think that there are a number of bills moving everything from changing sentencing to modifying oversight at Department of Juvenile Justice and even Florida Department of Corrections. It's an initiative that I think has finally gotten ripe here in Florida, and that may be the most significant thing they, you know, get done this session, and it's sort of creeped up on us in a way.
How much of this may be also driven by the opioid crisis? Because whether it is in criminal justice, where just about every expert says some kind of treatment and is necessary rather than just strict incarceration if you want to defuse this, to handling things like foster kid programs and the like, the state's going to have to wrestle with this perhaps more aggressively than it has to date.
Right, right. And there are, that's another area where there is legislation moving. I think it's going to depend enormously on how much money they're going to put into the programs. The governor came up with a budget proposal that many think falls far short of where it needs to be. I think there is an effort, and we saw some movement this week, actually, in the House, an effort to maybe come up with a little more heftier amount of money to address those treatment and prevention programs that you mentioned.
Heading into week three, any idea if the Senate will kind of get itself in gear? It has a little bit of ground to make up since it lost this entire week two by canceling all those meetings and then trying to come more into concurrence with what's going on in the House?
Right. Well, the Senate is scheduled to meet on the floor on Wednesday. One issue that will come up that may present an opportunity for some discussion is their rules change. They are going to adopt a rule that says that every senator, every session, and every member of his or her staff needs to have 1 hour of sexual harassment training, online or in person. That is a very modest change to the Senate rules, given all they have encountered with the sexual harassment allegations against Senator Latvala, which led to his resignation. The other issues surrounding, marital infidelity involving senators and so forth. What they're not going to vote on is a change in their rules or in their employee conduct. And that is just a simple policy change they just released this week. And those changes are very elaborate, very detailed, and do address in specific ways what is sexual harassment and what is unacceptable behavior. But they have chosen not to put that in the rule. And I think there are some Democrats who have already made the point that if this is so important, why don't we put it in our rule and make it easier to punish senators that violate it? That may be part of the debate that happens when they meet on Wednesday.
We'll see what happens with that and what happens for the final. What do we have now? 7 weeks to go in this Florida legislative session.
That's right. Yeah.
Following you every step of the way, Mary Ellen Kloss, the head of the Capitol Bureau for the Miami Herald. Thanks for dropping by.
Thank you, Tom.
Florida felons have been fighting for the right to vote for years now, and while a grassroots petition movement within the state has spurred interest in the issue, two proposals in the Constitution Revision Commission look to tackle the controversy from another angle, as we hear from Andrew Quintana.
Jermaine Miller is a former inmate who has been fighting for his right to vote for the past 2 years.
I mean, everybody paid. If you went into jail or prison, you paid your debt to society. You should have your right to get your debt back. You know, get your rights back within not 5 years, 3 years, but, 2 years or a year, maybe.
Miller spoke to WFSU back in October. He's part of the citizen-led ballot initiative aiming to get 1 million signatures in favor of felons regaining their voting rights automatically. So far, Florida's Division of Election website shows the movement has 750,723 signatures, 16,000 away from reaching the ballots. Meanwhile, a new avenue for restoring felon rights is emerging as two proposals are moving in the Constitution Revision Commission, the panel that meets every 20 years to revise the state constitution and put political changes before voters. Proposals 7 and 21 aim to reinstate the right to vote and hold office for felons who have served their sentence and completed parole. And while both have the same goal in mind, they differ in strategy, as Democratic Senator Daryl Rusin explains.
Well, I believe in the ultimate redemption of individuals who have paid their debt, done their time, but we also live in community, in society, where it may not be, people may not feel the same redemption that I feel.
He was speaking about Proposal 21, which he sponsors. The proposal gives certain felons the right to vote and hold office. Persons convicted of felonies involving the use or threat of physical force or violence against any individual are disqualified. This opens the door for felons convicted of nonviolent crimes, which Rusin says is nearly 75% of the 1.5 million disenfranchised voters. Proposal 7, sponsored by former Senate Democratic leaders Arthenia Joyner and Chris Smith, mirrors more of the language used in the petition. It allows felons the right to vote and hold office once they have served their sentence, no matter the crime. And while both proposals and the Citizen Initiative are competing for votes in the 2018 election, Roussan believes the competition is good. He says it directs more eyes to the issue at hand.
Locking people up, punishing them for life with the Scarlet F, is more of a cost to society and community than it is a benefit. It's more of a cost than it is a deterrent. And I think that the wave of reform has been cranked up, and we're moving down the highway with a date towards freedom.
Both proposals need to pass one more Constitution Revision Committee before heading to the full 37-member CRC. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Andrew Quintana.
The Competitive Workforce Act would prohibit discrimination for LGBT individuals working for businesses in Florida. Devondra Alston has more.
Republican Representative Ben Diamond of St. Petersburg says he is proud to have filed Senate Bill 66 again this year.
From my perspective, this is the right thing to do. This is also the smart thing for our state to do from a business perspective. We have learned there is a significant economic impact to the problems of discrimination. And that's why we believe that there needs to be statewide protections in these areas.
Diamond says the bill does not affect the First Amendment. He says that everyone should have the right to work in all places free of discrimination. The bill would add LGBT people to the Florida Civil Rights Act of 1992.
Unfortunately, the civil rights protections that we need for our LGBT community are not on the books. And that's what we're trying to do with this law. We're trying to update our civil rights laws statewide. You know, we think about the efforts we're trying to make as a state to recruit major employers here like Amazon.
Orlando Democrat Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith says many of the Fortune 500 companies had non-discrimination policies for LGBT individuals prior to this bill.
They're doing that not only because they know it's the right thing to do, but they know that it's the right thing to do for their business if they want to recruit top talent and they want to make sure that they have a diverse workforce that obviously yields more productivity and more success in the short and long term.
According to Florida Competes, so far, 73% of Floridians support such rules, and 82% of Fortune 500 companies have internal protections in place. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Devondra Alston.
Now with a look at other Capitol action, here's Bob Brooks from our sister operation, the Florida Channel.
If they want a chance at getting any hometown spending projects in the state budget, House lawmakers are required to put those requests in bill form. The measures also have to be heard in committee before they can move on in the budget process. Such was the case for more than 40 bills related to funding projects at various state colleges and universities Friday. Here's a sampling. House Bill 2423 includes Broward College's $28 million request for a STEM center on its north campus. House Bill 2395 includes University of South Florida's Sarasota Manatee STEM program at Moat Marine Laboratory and a request for $3 million in operational support money. And in House Bill 3055, Florida Atlantic University is requesting $1.2 million for the Max Planck Fellowship Program. Florida Agricultural and Mechanical University is hoping to get $10.6 million to upgrade its classroom technology and distance learning systems requested in House Bill 3499. After getting the nod from the House Higher Education Appropriations Subcommittee, all of the measures can be forwarded to the House Full Appropriations Committee for review. From the Florida Channel, I'm Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, a measure to give Floridians more flexibility when paying back consumer finance loans has made its way to the House floor, as we hear from Regan McCarthy.
The measure would let companies structure loans so that a person can pay those loans off biweekly rather than waiting for the first of the month. It's a change Palm Bay Republican Representative Randy Fine says is intended to better match the needs of most working people.
The issue is, frankly, many people get paid twice a month or every other week. Sometimes it's challenging on these types of loans to require them to be paid once a month because it requires you to save money from your first paycheck to have with your second paycheck. This would allow these companies to effectively structure these loans to line up with how people get paid.
Some lawmakers questioned whether the change is needed, saying some people may already be paying their loans in that manner. But Fine says current law prevents companies from writing loans in which payments are due more than once a month.
I do not know whether it's illegal for someone to sort of voluntarily go and pay a loan early. But what I do know is it is illegal today for these types of loans to be structured in period. It is illegal to structure these loans with payment cycles less than monthly. So we're just giving flexibility.
Fine says the proposal would apply to new loans and would ban any changes that would result in an increase in late fees. But some, like Boca Raton Republican Representative Bill Hager, wonder what the impact might be on interest.
If it's paid off twice a month as opposed to the end of the month, the fact is the payment at mid-month is going to come in the front door to the lending company sooner than it would at least half of that payment at the end of the month. So it seems to me there ought to be a walk down in commensurate related interest.
Fine says that would likely be the effect, but he doesn't expect his measure would make a significant change in the amount of interest or the interest rate paid by a person with a biweekly rather than monthly loan.
The maximum rates allowable under law are not affected by this bill.
But Tampa Bay Republican Representative James Grant says he does see one significant change the bill would make. Grant says the bill would increase access to credit for many Floridians.
There are constituents of ours and people in this state who do not have the same access to credit that we do. To the extent that we can open up the market, make it a more predictable market where these products can come in, consumers, constituents can have access to credit, I think is a very, very good thing.
And Fine agrees that is something his bill would help support.
Again, the purpose of this bill is to make it easier for folks who get these types of loans to be able to repay them by creating the opportunity for the companies who provide these loans to set up repayment schedules in line with how people get paid. This should help people build credit ratings, credit scores, to enable them to be more active participants in our capital markets.
Fine's bill is one of several proposals up for consideration this legislative session that seek to increase the ability for people to access and safely use credit. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank Devondra Alston, Andrew Quintana, our sister operation, the Florida Channel, and contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FBR Cap Report, and join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.